Man, I love this song. If this doesn't put you in the baseball mood, I don't know what we have to do. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, here on this Tuesday morning, our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD products curated for life. Man, I know I've told this story before, but starting off my career in the early 90s in Cleveland on WHK, I did a baseball show with Matt Lodi from 10 to midnight, and this was our open.
Yeah.
So I heard this song in my head for hundreds and hundreds of times for many, many years. Still, it brings back memories. JP Aaron Sebia is in studio with us. JP, you heard Chase's gift, or is it a big bag of coal to the listeners? Because sports betting is legal. By the way, yesterday was exactly a year. November 1st last year is when it became legal. Chase just gave, is it a gift or is it a trick or a treat
it
to
is.
The listeners that the Braves win game six tonight? Bet the house.
Yeah.
A lot of hesitation. A lot of hesitation.
JP's not feeling it.
This is radio and he's going,
Chase. Max Fried scares me and it's not, his last three starts obviously have not been great.
Yeah.
But I will say, you can't look at the box score because his start against the Astros, I didn't think he pitched bad. They kind of hit little bleeders. I just think that offense, statistically, it was the best team against left-handed pitching in Major League Baseball. So that's another thing that kind of throws a wrench. It's just, I think it goes to game seven. Mm. But I still like the Braves, though.
Really?
I still like the Braves.
In game seven?
Yeah, I still like the Braves.
Wow.
But I just think what stunk is Charlie Morton's rotation spot was on Sunday, and that's, I truly believe, and this is hindsight, they slammed the door on Sunday if that doesn't happen to Charlie Morton. Mm. That's the tough part. That's what, to me, stings.
Yeah, I was there Sunday and kind of was thinking the same thing because they had to go two bullpen games in a row, which is, I guess a little more common now, but it was – some of the management by Snicker, I think he left a couple guys in,
Minter. He left Minter. I thought Minter, he left them in a little too long.
Yeah.
But then you have to think, right? That's the part of this, and I love having these conversations, is sometimes you have to wear it a little bit to get on the back half of something. And what I mean by that is, like, Smiley, three innings, as subtle as that may be, I think that could win him a game six, like tonight, because he goes out there and he finishes that game. You don't have to use. So you did not use your all-star lineup, which is pretty much Matzik, Jackson, and Will Smith.
Yeah.
Chris Martin has had some good innings. So if you think about it, now if you have a lead, I'm going gas pedal full. You can have Matzik run out there for two. You can have Jackson out there for two. And you have Will Smith. I'm telling you, all three of those guys can go two innings if you need it.
Right.
And so I think Smiley being able to eat those innings in game five can win you game six.
How quick is the hook on Fried, though?
Okay. Here's where you think. All right. So Framber went out there, Valdez, and gives up a grand slam in the first and gives him a little bit of length, right? And then they had to go to the bullpen. But I just think that Max Fried, you have to start to think, okay, game – we have Ian Anderson, right, for game seven. It would be your game seven starter. Do I let him go out there if it's something where they score early and he has to allow him to throw pitches and get deeper into that game, even if they're – let's call it down 5-0. You have to wear it a little bit because if now you don't want to go to those guys in the bullpen, you don't want to use those guys. Because if it's a – now if you're talking about the fourth, then you can pull them because now you can throw multiple innings, Matzik. You can throw Jackson, Chris Martin again. So it depends on what part of the game he starts to fall apart. If he falls apart early, you still have to ride with him because you don't want to go to your bullpen because now I have to think as a manager, game seven.
Yeah,
because game seven, I can lose game six and still have a game seven, but when it comes down to it, I have to think about the game that if I lose, I'm done, and that's game seven.
Right.
We had Kevin Burkhardt on Friday from Atlanta, and we were talking about the post-game show, and I've been kind of watching just, you know, just everybody interact and get everybody's take, whether it's A-Rod or Frank Thomas, just that whole crew. And they all played the game, Big Poppy, at a high level. You did the same thing, and it's very clear John Smoltz doesn't like the way they handle pitchers. Tom Glavine came on with us last week. He doesn't like the way they handle the pitchers today. Are you with them, or are you okay with how the game is played today?
No, I don't like it. But there's a couple things where analytics is good for a couple reasons. One, I think information is good, and maximizing numbers, which is obviously third time through, first starter, the numbers go up. Also, one thing that people don't realize is analytics decrease value, right? You think about it. As a starter, it decreases your value if you're only going four innings, five innings. It's you're not getting to that 200-inning mark. You're not – there's things that analytics are doing, not just numbers-wise as far as for the game. They're decreasing value of guys. If you're a right-handed hitter and a left-handed hitter – and you face only one side, you platoon, now you have 250 at-bats, so I can't come to the table and say, hey, this is what I'm worth. Well, no, you're not, because you're worth half of what you could possibly be worth. Same thing where they talk about, oh, the high leverage inning would be in the seventh inning. So now you're getting a hold as opposed to a save in the ninth, right? So analytics have done two things. It's allowed them to get information, but it's allowed them to decrease value. And as a starter, if you're going a Max Scherzer, if you're going a Gerrit Cole, those are the guys that are your starters still, they're getting paid $300 million. So how can I diminish that and still make my team good? Well, I don't let them go as long, which I think stinks, because it doesn't – how could you get better if you don't ever have to be in those situations – to get better?
I never really, Chase, I don't think we've, as many times as we've talked, I don't think we've ever brought up the business angle.
That's
an interesting point, because you're right. It's actually very smart by these franchises who are now all on board. Yes, it's a great tool of information, but it's also good for business.
Yeah.
It keeps the price tag down.
Well, you think about it, right? You're a team. I'm a GM. I have a player going to his first year of arbitration. Remember, Dallas Keuchel with the Houston Astros at the time had broken a record. I think he went from league minimum to was $7 million his first year of arbitration, right? That was a guy who won a Cy Young, Gold Glove, and he was pitching 7-8 a game. So now you have somebody who's young. Let's call it Trevor Rogers for the Marlins, all-star, rookie. I run him out there five innings. Oh, I'm saving his arm. I'm saving this. Come arbitration,
then
numbers are very different.
Yeah,
and so that's where, again, I know that it's this whole matchup thing, but there's a lot of benefits to teams using, which is why now I think Major League Baseball is going to step in, because arbitration, if I take 40 saves or 20 saves and 20 holds, what's going to get more money? So now, let's throw him in the seventh because that's the highest leverage inning. Well, also it does, if he's not a closers make $20 million a year. The bona fide closers make 15 to 20. So if I'm a guy that is not a quote-unquote closer, I'm a leverage swing guy, it might be $7 to $8 million.
So when you say baseball could jump in, are you talking about the PA?
Yeah, the Major League Players Association. There's going to have to be ways to value guys, which will make, I think, reverses – teams going, well, we have to, it doesn't matter. Now we're stuck. If he has 30 holds, I have to pay him $15 million as opposed to, again, I analytics are great. I'll say this. I am a guy who likes analytics. For the baseball side, I learned a lot with playing with the Tampa Bay Rays. I learned why they're so good. I learned why they're above other teams. When I played for the Blue Jays, played for the Rangers, and then I got to the Rays, I'm thinking, wow, okay, this is why spin rate makes a difference. This is why up and down in the zone as opposed to east and west, right? North and south. That's why you see guys throwing balls on the top of the zone as opposed to down in the zone and fastballs, where That was old school thinking. You know, so there's great things of analytics, but the business side, why wouldn't you try to devalue somebody if I can keep them for longer, or I can get two guys for the price of one?
Hmm. So what I was going to bring up on the post game, listening to them talk about, because Bregman was really struggling. He's a star player.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. It was a house divided. And so I want to get your take as a former player on whether – now, they ended up doing it. This conversation that I bring up was before they actually moved him down. And they were having the discussion of on postgame, like, you got to move the lineup. You know, you got to move some guys up and down. Gurrell is – this guy is a professional hitter, and he's batting where?
He's in seventh.
Seventh. Like, what? And so they were having this discussion, and I don't remember which one it was. Like, they were saying, hey, you're going to mess with the psyche. Like, you don't change things. Like, you stay with – you know, and then another school of thought is, no, you've got to make the changes. So which side are you – because they eventually did. They moved Gurrell up to – let's see, they moved Bregman down to seven, right?
Yeah.
Gurrell up to five.
Yeah, Gurrell, yeah, five, and then Correa to third.
Correa to third.
And Correa was fifth.
Correct.
So they –
and it worked, but it's a game. So how do you feel about that? Do you stay with it, or do you make changes?
I think you have to go with the hot hand. And that's why even – I don't like matchups at times, because a lefty may struggle against a lefty. But if he's on fire, it doesn't matter if you throw a lefty, a righty, a whatever, underhand. When you're – as a hitter, when you're feeling good and you're going, it doesn't matter who you throw out there. You're going to be in a good spot. And so you want to have those guys in opportunities – that are swinging the bat well during the season. Now, if we're talking about during the season, do I say, hey, you're my third hole. We have 5 months, six months.
We'll just stick with you.
We'll stick with you. But when you're talking about a seven-game series, there's no stick with you, because if they would have lost that game, they're done. So they make that change, and all of a sudden, now Bregman comes up with a big hit. And listen, all these guys put pressure on themselves.
Sure.
If anybody thinks that as a player – you don't put more pressure on yourself than anybody would ever put on you outside, you're crazy. As a player, we wear that, and you want to be able to be the guy. And so all of a sudden they push you back. Does it take the pressure off? No, but do you feel a little bit more at ease? Like, okay, I'm in a little bit less of a spot here, and all of a sudden those guys set the tone. Now you feel better. It's an easier at bat in the seventh when you've come up, Correa, Gurriel, those guys have done what they need to do. And I think you go with the hot hand in these situations.
Yeah, the Braves Oregon player had some fun with that, though. Whenever Bregman came up to the plate, he played free-falling. So.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So that was pretty good. But along those lines, I mean, I know when Brian Snitker put Freeman in the second spot when he had batted third for forever, people were like, what are you doing? Like, but that has worked. Just the way the lineup, having Albies third, you know, especially when Acuna went down, you know, kind of doing it that way. I mean, you sometimes you have to gamble.
Well, here's why that move was huge, right? So Freeman obviously needs protection. I think Austin Riley is the MVP of this season, because Austin Riley got hot and then Freddie Freeman got hot. Because as a catcher, if I have Austin Riley on deck and I'm pitching to Freddie Freeman, I let Austin Riley try to beat me every single time until he really started beating me.
Yeah.
Then I had to throw to Freddie Freeman. Here's the move that people don't realize is Ozzie Albies, switch hitter. How much of a better hitter right-handed is he than he is lefty? Lefty, he hits power, but right-handed, he hits like 350.
Yeah.
So then three batter minimum. So as a manager, it puts me in a hole, because I try to bring in a lefty to face Freddie Freeman. Awesome. Lefty-lefty matchup. But I got Ozzie Albies now on deck, which I have to face with a lefty. And Ozzie Albies is a 350 hitter right-handed.
Right.
So then it really puts me in a hole, because I'm thinking, okay, do I pitch around a Freddie Freeman to keep a right-handed pitcher out there to face Albies as a lefty? Or do I try to bring in that lefty to come in and face Freddie Freeman, have that matchup, but I know that the guy on deck mashes left-handed pitching? So that's that little move where I think by doing that, it made teams have to pitch to Freddie Freeman.
So as a catcher, knowing that you have Freed in tonight and he's had struggles, what are those conversations going to be like between Darno and Freed, trying to to get Max in the right headspace.
It's, you know, that's the crazy part about being a catcher. It's you don't game plan any different. It's just about execution, right? It's Max Fried's going to try to attack this lineup the same way, but it's going to be not making the mistakes that he made, leaving the ball out over the plate. Maybe if you make adjustments, it's we're going to go to the slider over the curveball, or we're going to go to breaking ball earlier in the game, like from the second pitch, right? As a catcher, usually you try to make it through the lineup one time without showing everything you have. But maybe now that approach is different. Like, hey, we're going to pitch these guys pretending they're two strikes from the gate. And what I mean by that is I'm making sure I bury that breaking ball. I'm making sure I throw that nasty breaking ball not to get me over for a strike, right? You pitch a little bit differently. You always come in with a plan, and that's why baseball is so fun as a catcher especially, because I can sit down and go, Chase, this is how I want you to attack 1 through 9, right? I sit down with a starter pregame, and we go through the entire lineup. We're going to attack this guy this way. We're going to attack this guy this way. But you go to the bullpen, you might not have your pitches in the bullpen. And so now all of a sudden we're starting this game, and I go, okay, I have to attack a certain way, but you don't have it yet. So how can I figure out how to get to that point? So you have to see how Fried comes out from the gate. As a catcher, you go through your game plan, you prepare, but when he throws that first pitch, you know either we're in trouble or, all right, he's got his stuff. So that's the biggest thing. And when you say the game plan as a catcher, I always thought it's hard to game plan. You come up with a plan, but once the game starts, you have to figure out, how can I use Max Fried to be the best Max Fried? And what does he have going? Because I might have to go to that slider way more because that's the pitch that he has, and then eventually get to that curveball. But, you know, this is a lineup where I think strike one, you fall behind against these guys, it's tough. So that would be my number one thing is, hey, be aggressive early.
Right. So you saw Adam Duvall firsthand. Obviously the Braves know him quite well from his time there. He goes to Miami. They get him back. He's been a huge bat for them, hit the grand slam the other night. But what do you see with his swing that just makes him so dangerous?
He's just got that crazy God-given pop, right? He hits balls that you like, all right, he hit. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, he hit that in the second deck. Like it just like
– power.
Yeah, his power just like is insane. And I played against this guy through the minor leagues. He is a guy – who is a nightmare because when he gets hot, it's tough. And you know this. As a Braves fan, he will go 0 for 10 with 7 punch outs and not come close to a baseball. And you're like, holy smokes. But then the next 5 at-bats, he hits 3 homers. And you're like, what the heck? I mean, it's – and I love with runners in scoring position, he's just better. I mean, you don't have all those RBIs and hit the average that you hit when you're not hitting as good as he is with runners in scoring position. So you just have to be careful with him. His nitro zone, home run hitters have lofty swings, right? You throw a ball down, he crushes hanging breaking balls. So as a catcher, I have to think, if I throw a breaking ball, it's got to be one that's got to be down. And if my fastball, he's the one that up elevated, you can blow it by him up in the zone. But if you miss down, it's not coming back. And so he's a really tough guy to pitch to, because that margin for error is smaller, but you can really, really execute pitches and put them away. And that's why he's been fun to watch. I love him. He's a great guy. He is really a person that you root for. And he's one of those players that now that's the game. You know, you can hit 240 with 30 plus, driving 100. He'll take his walks, and he's a scary hitter.
So with the Braves and the lineup that they have had, do you think that even going to the DH tonight, which Houston's used to, does that give – do the Braves have an advantage, or is it more even just because they – Snicker can set the lineup the way he really wants with his hitters?
Yeah, I think that it's – the Braves actually have a good lineup to a DH, and I think that it helps them because there's some National League teams that it doesn't. I think that it is an even match against the Houston Astros. I mean, this I'm in the ballpark of that. Everybody should have the DH because I just think that National League. I just think that it's time to have a full on DH. Everybody, no pitchers hit, but I like it. I think that it's great. I think that the Braves and the Houston Astros match up well offensively, back and forth, and I think the Braves are in a good spot. And it's again, Max Fried is that X factor. If he can go out there and if he can get into the fifth, I think the Braves win the game.
Do most players feel that as you, or you spent the bulk of your time in the American League and you saw it firsthand? Like, how do players, is it a divide, or is most of them think like what you just said? Because I feel like I've been saying it for years and years and years, and it's like, you know, it's like if you're an American League fan, you're like, yeah. Any National League fan is like, no way, no way. So I've always been curious how the players felt.
I will say, when you're talking about players, 99% of the players want a DH. The 1% are the pitchers that enjoy hitting. They're like, no, I want to hit. I still want to hit. I still want to have an opportunity. Maybe a Greinke. Maybe
they did that the other night.
Yeah, maybe a Greinke. Greinke rakes. Maybe a Stroman.
Fried.
Yeah, maybe a Fried. Yeah, he had a walk-off hit against the Marlins.
I was at that game. That was the crazy extra inning game. Yeah. Fried had the. They sent Fried up, and he got the game-winning
Scherzer
hit.
Scherzer can hit. You know, I mean, you got.
Yeah, there's so I would say the guys that enjoy hitting. Yeah, that's the 1%. Everybody else, I remember Charlie Morton, I think the one thing that they asked him before the season started is like, what are you least looking forward to? And he's like, hitting. Hitting. But it's the truth. I mean, you watch these guys. I used to see in the interleague, we had Scott Downs with the Blue Jays foul a ball off and break his big toe. And this is one of our better pitchers, one of our better relievers. And all of a sudden now he's out for a while because – he hit a foul ball off his toe. Are you kidding me?
And he doesn't want to hit?
No, none of these guys. It's like, stop. So I just think, it makes it more fun because you watch. I thought calling a game in the National League was easier, right? I have a seventh hitter up. I know that the pitcher's hitting ninth. I can mess with the seventh and eighth hitter because I know that, well, we have an out at the nine hole. But then now go to the American League, and your ninth hitter's got 20 homers, and you're going – okay, how am I going to, you know, it's a little different, right? It is. So I think it's more fun. Managers will probably be happy about it because it's a little less thinking for them. Some guys may like it. I used to think every time we'd play in the National League, an American League manager would just get pummeled. Like it was like they would make decisions where we're sitting there going, this is not good. So I think it makes the playing field a lot more even and makes it more entertaining.
JP Aaron Sebia is in studio with us. We'll step away with a quick break. Come back, more baseball talk here on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, our weekly chat with Predators General Manager David Poile coming up at 11:15. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe here in our game studios on this Tuesday. JP Aaron Sebia, VFL. Yeah, we talked to him when the Vols made it to Omaha in the College World Series. He's in studio with us, Nashvillian, living here in the offseason. So tell everybody what you're doing, because I was telling you during the break that I went down to Miami the first week of August and took in a Marlins-Mets game. And Willie, who's not here today with us, he helped hook up some really nice tickets. There were only like 7,000 people there, which was concerning. I'm like, they're a good team. And Elijah, turn JP on for me, please. Thank you. I'm like, man, nobody shows. He's got this beautiful, you know, new ballpark. But anyway, tell everybody what you're doing, because I went to the bathroom and they had the radio broadcast on. I was like, oh, there's JP. You were doing the radio, but you said
I wasn't
you
in the bathroom. Though.
You weren't in the bathroom doing the game.
I was not in that bathroom.
No, they were just playing the radio broadcast in the bathroom, very loud. And I think that's why I said there were 7,000, because there wasn't anybody in the bathroom. So it was, you know, I could hear everything just fine. But you do radio and television for the Marlins.
Yeah, so I do radio. And then I also do the pre- and post-game show. So some days I have my Marlins radio hat. Some days I have my Bally Sports pre and post game show, and I've actually done a couple games, like the actual broadcast, so that the TV broadcast, so that was fun. But yeah, that's what I had 130 games this year, so yep. A pretty busy schedule, and it's cool because in radio, obviously, I can tell a story. And if I don't get it in the first inning or the second inning, I can get it in the seventh. Or if I have something to say about a player, if I didn't miss it, I can get it in the seventh. TV.
Not so much.
You got a minute. You got to say what happens. And at the end of the game, you say what actually happened. so you try to be right more than wrong, but it's fun. And as a catcher, it's always cool because I can break down the game. That's the one thing. Why people say catchers are good managers. It's more because every facet of the game I had to deal with. You know, it's offensively as a hitter, I had to know all the pitchers. I had to think offensively. And then as a catcher, I had to think defensively. I had to call a game. I had to know, you know, what the starter was doing, who we have warming up in the bullpen, where are we at in the lineup, how am I pitching, and we're in a shift. So I got to make sure that I don't make a mistake throwing a certain pitch. So all the parts of the game as a catcher, you have to really learn, because I played first base. 2014, Prince Fielder got hurt, and I got to move to first base. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I was like, I was sitting there at first base looking at the crowd. I was like, wow, there's people in the stands. This is cool. Thinking about what I'm going to eat.
All in,
yeah,
right.
You're just like really taking it all in. And I'm, you know, every once in a while, I'd like look at the catcher and laugh because he was giving signs. And I'm like, you're dumb. You have to actually think. Now I'm out here and this is fun. I don't have to think. Ball hits, they hit the ball to the shortstop. I go to first base. But as a catcher, you don't have that. You know, games are done, and I felt like my brain was mush, but it's because you're thinking about the game. So it's fun now to be able to analyze it and break it down.
So there's been a lot of, I don't know, rumors, swirling stories for now a good while, and we've talked to this group, and we've talked to people involved, but there's obviously this push to get Major League Baseball to Nashville. And we're just trying to figure out, is there anything to this, or is this just great chatter for the show, great chatter for the market? You're in baseball circles. Is this real, or how should we take this?
Well, I want it to be real.
Yeah, so do we.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be phenomenal.
It'd be nice.
You know, actually, it's funny. Dave Dombrowski.
Mm-hmm. We talked to him when he was here.
Yeah, so I've talked to him as well, but then he goes to the Phillies.
Right.
And now he's in Philadelphia. And then Tony La Russa, who was another part of it, now is managing in Chicago.
that's part of it, JP. We're talking to all of them. That's like, okay, we're getting excited. And then they take gigs
they
elsewhere.
Go.
And
yeah.
It's like, okay, so is this real or not real?
And then there's some guys, you know, Steve Ford. I don't know if you guys have ever talked to Steve Ford, but he's a guy who he owns Winners and Losers and Doghouse, and he's a person who that they approach as well on the financial side. And so there was some movement there as well. So the conversations are happening. I do think that if it were to happen, you know, I think that Vegas is another place that they were talking about trying to put a team because of the success of
Vegas is going to be a four sport.
I think that's where the A's end up, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I think, and the writing's on the wall. I mean, Bob Melvin's leaving to go take the Padres job, which is a much better job now. But
yeah, it's much better.
And he said the uncertainty with where the A's are going, I mean, that had a lot to do with it. But right there, I mean, that should be a sign. They got to get this figured out.
Well, and here's another thing. So I played in Las Vegas in AAA, and the owner of the AAA team in Las Vegas, who owned the AAA team, is now the owner of Circa, the new hotel that was just built. Okay,
yeah,
I've
been there.
Okay, so I was just there. I was just there this past weekend. So his name is Derek Stevens. He owns a few hotels there, the Las Vegas, all that stuff. And so another big financial guy behind it. And he had talked that, you know, Major League Baseball had been reaching out to guys because they want to have a team in Vegas. So I think that comes as well. I think that Vegas is a prime spot. I've seen that Portland. I know that Russell Wilson was talking about Portland here. He's on the group that's trying to get them there because AAA used to have a team. The Padres used to have a AAA team in Portland. It was fun. I don't see Portland being a Major League Baseball town. I really don't. But I think Vegas and Nashville should be the two.
Yeah.
And I think Nashville would be awesome for baseball because there's actual fans, right? You start to think about, look at Tampa Bay Rays. Look at teams that don't get appreciated with winners. I mean, when I was playing at Tampa.
Nobody shows up.
It's crazy to me that they were fighting for first place when I was playing in that division. And we'd be there in September. There'd be 5,000 fans. And it's like, what?
We went there for a day game against the Angels.
Yep.
A couple of years ago. Rays were, you know, just like you said. And it was, what was it, August? When did we go?
Late July, earlier. Yeah.
No, I'll tell you what it was. It was when the
Guns
N' Roses concert was here at Nissan. So that was in July. It was July.
Because I had gone to the July 4th race at Daytona.
Yeah.
And drove over. That's what it was.
We go there. We're sitting four rows behind home plate against the Angels. Great game. Great matchup. Angels are good. The Rays are good. And if it wasn't for them bussing in kids, and I don't know what the number was because they were loud, screaming the whole game.
SpongeBob playing in the background.
Yes, right. If it wasn't for that, I'm not sure what the actual count. I think we could have gone around and counted the fans that were there if you took away the busloads of kids that were there from school.
It's crazy. You know, and it's funny because people used to ask, like, well, why'd you play so well in Tampa? And I used to laugh because of what I tell people, and it's true that the pressure is minimum.
There's no pressure.
Right? You have the retired person who's not a fan, and you strike out with bases loaded, and you're walking back to the dugout, and they're like, it's okay, hon. You're fine. It's okay. You look great. And it's like, perfect, as opposed to when I was striking out bases loaded to end the inning in Toronto, I'd walk back to the dugout, and it was just, you suck. You're going to AAA. I hate you. So it was like, I mean, it was kind of at the end of my career a nice spot to be in where they were offering me milk and cookies after I punched out in a big situation. So I think there's some pros and cons to it. But, I think for baseball, it's just, you know, you go to a Wrigley Field. You go to St. Louis. You go to San Francisco. You play in these parks, right? And Boston, which Boston, Fenway, I don't know if there's a better atmosphere than Fenway when it's rocking.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, wow, this is baseball. Like, this is fun. This is cool. This is an atmosphere. This energy. The battery, what they've done in Atlanta, I will tell
it's
you.
It's so awesome.
It is. They have done a phenomenal job of putting together not only a place that you can go and watch a game, but, like, you're entertained. Like, you can really have a fun time going to a baseball game. That's when baseball's really fun. And when you see teams that are really good and don't have any of that stuff, you think, why do they why keep it there? Why have it there?
And Nashville would be that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no – we already know that. I mean, that goes without saying. So, is it the Rays? Is it expansion? Like, how does it happen if it's going to happen,
well,
in your opinion?
Well, the Rays in this Montreal talk is weird because I think that doesn't make sense. You imagine – living in two places, and for anybody who thinks that, I mean, I'm not supposed to say this because I got in trouble the other time, but because obviously sports and TV, our TV deals and stuff like that are with Tampa Bay and all that stuff, but it just, as a player, it'd be really hard to do. You know, you live both places, you have to have two apartments, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So if I think Tampa moves at some point, can it be Nashville? Will it be Montreal? I mean, they have that connection already. Obviously, they want baseball back in Montreal, supposedly.
I guess.
But I think that it could be an expansion team as well. I thought that in Vegas, who knows? I just think that they have to make a move out of Tampa. Oakland's got to go. And I do believe at some point Nashville will have a Major League Baseball team. It's too good of a city not to. I think that it would be awesome to have a team here.
Yeah. And then you could, you know,
That'd be nice. And I don't have to leave. I can just stay here the entire time. Yeah,
stay here. Just saying.
Got a broadcaster ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. All right. So let's wrap it up with this. So just reading the room, back to our beginning conversation, you're saying bad bet. Strohs win game 6. Braves win game 7. Is that what I took from that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know that your heart's going to be in the middle of your like throat, but
yeah.
And it's tough. I see they're a good team against the Astros are a good team against left-handed pitching. You could see the difference against the right-handed pitcher that they've struggled with, in Ian Anderson. I think that the Astros win game 6. Luis Garcia, he's coming off a good start. The guy could be a rookie of the year topic, right? Go to Astros. They feel good about themselves. They win game. I think game 7, I know that they're at home. It doesn't matter to me. I think Ian Anderson takes the ball and then.
And they don't take him out? Well, if he's pitching really well?
Well, yeah, that's ridiculous.
No.
Yeah, you have a no-hitter and you go back, sit, take a seat. Thanks for
I wish you guys could have seen me. Like Friday night in Truist Park, because everybody there is like, we're all aware. We all know what's going on. We're not talking about it. It's like, okay, great game. And then they go to the pen. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And everybody else in baseball that understands the game is going, why? Stop. Please stop.
Smoltz is pissed on the air about it. Like, what's going on?
Well, yeah, that's everyone's upset. So I think. Wrapping it up, Game 7, I think the Braves win Game 7. I hope for Chase that they win Game 6 so that you don't have a heart attack. I really hope. But I want the Braves to win regardless. I Alex Anthopoulos was the GM who called me up.
Yep.
George Pulis, who's their trainer, was my trainer. Mike Frostad, their trainer, who's my trainer. John Gibbons, who was my manager, is a pro scout for them. So there's a lot of connection to the Atlanta Braves, so I want to watch them win. I just think it's going to be in Game 7.
Mm, okay.
There you go. We'll see.
J.P. Arencibia, there's words of wisdom. Game 6 is going to the Stros. Game 7, folks, tomorrow night. Chase's Bravos get it done. We'll see. Hey, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks
let's
for having
Let's do this
me.
Again.
Yeah, let's do it.
J.P. Arencibia in studio with us. That'll do it for hour number one. We'll come back more on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.